Well, before the voting started in this year's election, it was already very clear to us that the divisiveness and distrust that the campaign both fed on and then in turn amplified would need to be addressed in the election's aftermath. And so, we were planning to present a series of conversations around the themes of healing and reconciliation. The contentiousness of this week has been even worse than we'd feared. And so the urgency of addressing the wounds our democracy is displaying is only escalated. This is just the first in that series of conversations. Across the years, I've been grateful to be able to call on Rabbi Brad Hirschfield for wisdom and insights at different significant moments, and so I am really happy to have him join with us today. Brad, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
It's good to be here. Thank you for having me, Welton.
Were you shocked to see people marching in the streets of New York and other cities this week chanting, "Not my president"?
You know, well, I want to be clear. I was both shocked and even a little dismayed, and yet not shocked at all and totally understanding of it. So let me explain. In the sense that people are really concerned, based on at least pieces of Donald Trump's record, certainly in word and sometimes in deed, about what it means for him to be the president, I share some of those feelings. I have to be really honest. Mm-hmm. This is not the person whose candidacy I supported, and it was about more than simply policy for me. Mm-hmm. So the fact that people are saying, how can I identify with him as, quote, my president, I do have some understanding of that and appreciation of it. That said, I find it ironic since, like many people, I was one of the ones who was worrying about if he lost, were his supporters going to go into the streets and challenge the legitimacy of President Hillary Clinton? Mm-hmm. And as a result of him winning, we got just the opposite, where people who supported Hillary for president have now themselves taken to the streets and are using the very same language of, he is not my president. Mm-hmm. So I think the real issue is here, we have a body politic which is not really divided by ideology, but questions the fundamental legitimacy and authenticity of those they oppose. And that is a very serious threat to all of us, whatever policies or positions we take.
Mm-hmm. Brad, are we pressing too hard for reconciliation too soon?
Well, I think it's such a good question. I don't know that it's ever too soon to at least open the door to mm-hmm. reconciliation, mm-hmm. in theory. Yeah. In practice, though, timing is everything. But even more importantly, well, I think the path to reconciliation doesn't actually come by inviting something from others. Mm-hmm. It comes from turning inward and asking of something from ourselves. Mm-hmm. I think that each of us is going to have to ask ourselves, as painfully complicated as this may be, what is it our side did to get us into this mess? Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be really important for us to ask, what is it that has allowed each side to have such contempt for about half of the American population. In effect, what I'm suggesting, if we were using the Jewish tradition, is that the path to repair and restoration comes through first practicing penance and return to our own best values. That the challenges we face, if we're on the losing side, and I count myself among that losing side in this election, is not simply that we fail to market our ideas as effectively as possible. It does have to do, and it's hard for me to say this, with having completely misapprehended the felt needs of half of our fellow citizens, and at worst, actually having contempt for them. And then I would invite those on the right to ask, what does it mean that they were only able to coalesce in victory around a message that was so deeply angry? Mm-hmm. And what does it mean to build support off of that kind of rage?
Well, let's talk for a second, because that's a very strategic and profound way of approaching this. But let's stay for just a second on the side of people who are feeling hopeless, feeling betrayed, feeling more fear. What counsel do you have for them or for us?
So I would say let's try not to lump, they're all important, the three emotions you just talked about, which was hopelessness, fear, and betrayal. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they can feel betrayed unless we actually do what Mr. Trump was suggesting, and frankly I deplored before the election, suggesting that it was rigged. Mm-hmm. It can't be that we've been betrayed. Because just losing doesn't mean you've been betrayed. It means you lost. And that's true in life in general. If every time something bad happens to us, it becomes not just that we lost out, but that we've been betrayed, that is a recipe for the kind of rage which most of us who oppose Donald Trump found so deplorable about him, frankly.
Yeah.
So I don't want to become like the one I oppose just because now it's viscerally satisfying to me. So I think we do have to put aside, frankly, and that takes discipline, this sense of being betrayed. Sense of being hopeless? I don't know. It seems to me that at its best, hope has been one of the terms nurtured by the more progressive elements of our political culture. And now we're going to have to practice what we have preached for so long to others. How do we not lose hope? And if we can't do that, then it turns out that what we've been preaching really wasn't so good to preach because we can't practice it ourselves. So again, we have to turn inward and ask, in what can we still take hope at this moment? In terms of fear, look, I don't want to be naive. There are some things here which maybe are worth fearing, except typically we don't make our best decisions from fear alone. So I would say take stock of what there is to be afraid of, address it by first taking stock of ourselves, and then reaching out to others and seeing where we go from here. But on neither side can this be a debate about how to better market our own thinking. It has to become, where is it we are missing the felt needs of our fellow American brothers and sisters who may not share our political views?
Brad, there's been evidence that anti-Semitism as well as other kinds of hate and bias are on the rise and have seen elevation during this campaign. What should each of us be doing right now to push back against hate that may have been liberated by recent events?
Every time anyone is animated to build a sense of self based on the danger posed by others or the hatred we feel of them, take a breath and ask instead, even if you believe what you believe is true, I think it's patently false, whether it's hatred of Jews, Muslims, false. But let's assume it is. I'm not going to convince someone otherwise. Building a sense of self based on hatred of others will never bring you any joy. So at those moments, what I would say, forget it is what you hate about them, whoever your them is. What is it you love about being you? What is it how your best sense of being who you are as a Christian, as a Muslim, as a Jew, as an American, as a Democrat, as a Republican, as a progressive, as a conservative, how does that best understanding of who you want to be help you to accomplish what you want to accomplish, not how to oppose someone who isn't already like you?
Where in the history of your faith tradition do you look for the wisdom that we need right now?
Well, I guess there are a couple things. First of all, I look at the creation story and the rabbinic imagination, which has angels challenging God. Why would you create these people? They're going to mess things up like you wouldn't believe. And God casts that truth to the ground and raises up the deeper truth of love and says, because I love them and I want them to be. I understand all the good arguments for freaking out at this moment. But how are we going to allow our love of our fellow human beings and fellow Americans to, forgive the expression, trump the truth of our analysis about those with whom we disagree?
Would you talk for just a moment about why it is so important that we try to get over our angriness and the silos to which we take it and not be permanently alienated from people with whom we are convinced that we don't share anything in common?
At the very least, in the most pragmatic sense, I would invite people to ask if that was ever the ground from which they made the decisions about which they are most proud in their lives. I am willing to be open to the value of being more closed and more alienated, but someone will first have to show me where that is ever the path to the best possible decisions we make. There is a legitimate reason to be afraid sometimes in life, and biologically, the instinct toward fear is what keeps us from putting our hand into bushes and getting bitten by snakes. So I get that fear is a part of an appropriate human response to tense moments. But when fear is the guiding, animating emotion, it never leads us to the best decisions. And so our own self-interest demands that we figure out how to transcend some of these boundaries and ask questions of ourselves than we do of others. Not for them, and not for even America, though I believe that is the case, but for ourselves and our own happiness and our own personal futures.
Is it fair, Brad, to look at the recent events we've experienced, historic as they may be, and try to put them into a broader historical context, or is that a cop-out?
I think if it brings people a certain clarity and ability to move forward, it's worth it. If people feel like that's kind of nitpicking and not paying enough respect to the emotion of the moment, I wouldn't push anyone to do it. I think there is a time and place for that. Here, I'd be very pragmatic. If it helps as a resource toward reorganizing our ability for self-critique and building bridges with others, then history is a useful tool. If it feels like a distraction that diminishes the emotion and the power of this moment, don't worry about it. We can do that another day.
How optimistic are you about the nation's ability to come together eventually in the weeks and months ahead?
As a person of faith, Welton, I feel called upon to be optimistic. I think that's what it means to be a person of faith, whatever your faith or tradition, is to fundamentally believe that the world as it is not the world as it will be, and that people have the ability to transform it. So in that regard, I'm always optimistic and would always challenge anyone who calls themselves a religious person or a spiritual person who's not optimistic, at least more often than not, we all have moments where we're depressed, including me, to really check in with their faith. It should make you optimistic. Mm-hmm. That's from my heart. My head has a lot of questions. I don't know how many of us are really willing to take the personal risks on either side and feel the vulnerabilities of reaching out to people, not simply who we think are wrong, but really, I think, we're demonstrably wrong, and really take the risks to go through something together. I hope that we are. My faith demands that I feel that we are. My head says that every day is an opportunity to push myself and anyone I talk to in that direction. If I had to hold up a scorecard, I don't know. I know it's better than 50%. It's certainly not a sure thing. But since I guess I think that's probably the scorecard on most of life, I can live with it.
Well, Brad, listening to you, you always bring great insights. Thank you so much for being with us once again on State of Belief Radio.
It's always a pleasure, brother. If I do that, it's because you ask the wise questions that push us all in the right direction. Thank you.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to say a sincere thank you. If you've heard something on this week's show that you think would be helpful to someone you know, please share it with them. Direct them to stateofbelief.com, where they'll find full episodes, an in-depth archive, extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned in the show. The community that has grown around State of Belief Radio is active all week long online. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and engage in the discussion. We'd love to have your voice involved. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy, that State of Belief. The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see, he walked, he walked. Mm-hmm.